know and to understand. It is truly a privilege. As I stand before you this afternoon, I want to talk to you about Jonathan. Jonathan was a young man who had a great zeal and a zest and a faith in God. A young man that even amidst the difficulties and the struggles that came in life and the problems that came, he was there to stand forward and do the things that he knew was right. And he was there to trust in God no matter what dangers may possibly come. Jonathan was a man that had a great faith that when others were around him and could see the things that he did and see his example, it stirred them to do the things that they needed to do. There are many great lessons that we can learn from Jonathan. I'm going to look at three this afternoon as we come together. One is that Jonathan took the lead. Another that Jonathan planned. And another that Jonathan had a great faith in God. As I look at the events of these things that happened in his life in 1 Samuel chapter 14, I want to make mention of the fact that we are dealing with some areas that have to do with providence of God. And as I stand before you this afternoon, I'm going to readily admit that I do not fully understand the providence of God, and I'm not sure I even partially understand the providence of God. I do understand that God works. I do understand that God is alive and active, and I do understand that God is not miraculously working in your life or mine to bring things about. We need to keep that in mind. But with that in mind, and as we look at the example of Jonathan, many other individuals throughout the Word of God, I think we need to recognize that they had a great faith in God, and that in the events that happened in many of their lives, I do not see anything miraculous about it. But I see, working within Jonathan's life, I feel that it's the providence of God. I don't think there's anything miraculous about it. I believe it was just the fact that Jonathan trusted God and he went forward with what he knew was right. And I believe that as we look at that example, we need to strive to follow that in our lives. We may not understand providence. And I'm convinced, at least where I'm at today, that that's probably a good reason for the fact that we don't understand it, because it builds faith. We don't understand how God works. We do understand some ways about how He does not work, if we study the Word of God and want to know, that is. But we need to have that great faith in God to just trust Him and go forward, as Jonathan did in his life. One of the first things that I want to look at as we get into the situation that Jonathan was in 1 Samuel chapter 14, was the fact that he was a young man that took the lead. One of the things that I think that we need to recognize about leadership, and especially in the Lord's church, is that somebody is going to lead. Too often I see within the Lord's church that everybody just wants to sit back and say, well, I don't think I want to do anything. I don't think I want to stick my neck out. I don't think I want to take a chance of getting into trouble. Well, Jonathan was afraid of that. In fact, Jonathan was in trouble in the course of these events of this day. But that didn't bother him. It bothered him the fact that God's people were in jeopardy and somebody needed to step forward and do the things that were necessary to bring about the desired end that God had. And that God's desired end was that they be victorious. Jonathan took the lead. He struck out with a job to do and he did it. That speaks volumes about that man. And as we recognize reading the New Testament that all of these things happened unto them for your example and mine, we need to learn that God has given us work to do. And there is a time for leaders in the Lord's church. We need to follow the example of Jonathan. And we need to go ahead and stick our neck out and do what needs to be done. One of the things that I was told in school of preaching many, many years ago, I won't say how many, I'm getting older every day. That was let it be so, wasn't it? Anyway, we're going. One of the things that I was told in Bear Valley was that if you're not making any mistakes, it's because you're not doing anything. Brethren, we need to not be so afraid of making mistakes that we don't do anything, because if we're not doing anything, we're making the biggest mistake that we can ever make. I talked with Brother Jack not too long ago as I was dealing with some struggles where I'm at and talking about, you know, why I wish I'd have done this or wish I'd done this. He said, you know, we always learn and we grow forward. And that's what we need to be doing. Don't be afraid of making mistakes and just sit back, because that's a big mistake. We just need to do what needs to be done. And a lot of times within the Lord's church, a lot of these areas of leadership really don't have anything to do with getting out in the front and saying, all right, everybody follow me. Because within leadership, within the Lord's church, some of those minor things that we can do within the Lord's body are very much leading. And you know what? Ladies, there's a lot of ways that you can lead. Think about these things, for instance. You ever notice the light bulb that needs to be replaced? You know what? If we just take and see those little jobs that need to be done and get them done, maybe nobody will ever know, but somebody may see. And as they see your example, they may say the next time, you know what, I need to do that on my own. What about cleaning the baptistry or fixing the toilet? Instead of complaining and sayings about some of these little jobs, some you can do, some you cannot, those that you can do, just do. What about turning on or off the lights? What about visiting the sick, taking food to those that need it? What about oiling a squeaky hinge? These are areas of leadership where it's not a matter of you getting up front and taking charge. It's just a matter of you doing the things that need to be done and allowing others to see that work. I've worked in many small congregations over the years, and for some reason it's all those jobs that nobody thinks that they ought to do, and so often it's the preacher's job. That's really a shame. Brethren, I want to challenge each and every one here to take the lead. And we need to recognize that as leaders, we need to balance setting the example with doing everything. Sometimes we can do that, can't we? Sometimes, as I know in a small congregation, it's so hard to get people sometimes to do some of the simplest little jobs. In fact, if you leave a little early, guess what? You come back next time your service is open and nobody's locked the doors and the lights are still on. And the toilet needs to be flushed. That's not a pleasant thought. But brethren, we need to balance being the leaders and helping others to lead. And we'll look at that a little bit more later. But I want to note that within the leadership that Jonathan took, that he was careful to choose faithful people to help him to be able to do the work. I want to go to verse 7. It says, and his armor bearer said unto him, do all that is in thine heart. Turn thee, behold, I am with thee according to thy heart. Jonathan had an individual that he could go to and say, hey, look, we've got work to do, and I want you to come and I want you to be with me. And you know what? He was a faithful individual. And he jumped in there right with him, and he was there to back him up or go forward or do whatever Jonathan expected him to do. As we look at the work within the Lord's church, we need to recognize that we need to choose faithful people to help us do the jobs that need to be done. Sometimes we make mistakes, I believe, in choosing an individual. We just think, well, it'll make them do better. Well, if they're not qualified to do a job, maybe we should find somebody else. Jonathan was very careful to not have somebody back up his neck that was going to turn and run. To have somebody back up his neck that wasn't going to back him up and was not able to do that job. He was very careful to choose faithful people. Remember Paul and John Mark? In Acts chapter 13, in verse 13, remember, John turned back with them because the work was discouraging, and whatever the reasons were, he was not able to continue to go to the work. And then a little bit later in Acts chapter 15, Paul and Barnabas were ready to go back on the missionary journey. And Barnabas said, let's take Mark with us. And the Apostle Paul was saying, now wait just a minute. We don't want to choose him because he's turned back from the work. And we want somebody that will be able to do a good work. Now it's neat because we see Barnabas, he was that encourager. And he saw within John Mark something that the Apostle Paul was having trouble seeing. It's neat how, you notice, two great missionary works came out because of this dispute. Now, Paul and Barnabas still loved one another, but they had dissension between them. But they took that, still loved one another, and went about doing the good work that needed to be done. Well, we notice later in 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 11 that Paul mentioned the fact that Mark was beneficial to him in the work. Choose faithful people. Choose faithful people. And then I think we need to recognize that, and I believe this is something I believe is assumed within the text because of the position that Jonathan had, and that was that he was trained to lead. He was trained to do the work that needed to be done. There is no doubt in my mind, as you look down in the secular history to see what went on in the training of the leaders and the young people that were coming up in the court, that they were trained to do this work. And I believe it's safe to assume that Jonathan was trained. He was trained to lead and he was trained to work. You know, I think something that we need to learn very carefully from this. And there's many other places. We can look at Moses and how he was trained. We can look at how he trained Joshua. We can look at how Jesus trained the apostles in the work that they would have to do. We need to take it seriously to train our young people to lead. I believe one of the big problems that we have within the church is we a lot of times want to put our young people in the background and say, well, when they get a little older. And I don't think that's the right thing to do. We need to train the young people to lead from the time that they're very young. We trained our boys when they were very young at home. We'd have them read. We'd have them do other things at home. And then when they became of age enough that they could do it in the assemblies, they would read or they would lead prayers or wait on the Lord's table. But they were trained to do that. And I hope that all the congregations where you are at are encouraging your young people, both young men and young ladies, to train and lead and work in the areas of their expertise and the roles that God has given them. If we don't train our young people when they're young, they're going to get up and they're not going to be trained and they won't continue in the right way. We've got a great responsibility. We need to train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. And I can tell you something. We need to give them that experience. Moses trained Joshua. Jesus trained the apostles. And then they encouraged them to lead. They got busy and got working. Jesus sent the apostles out two by two in Matthew chapter 10. They went everywhere preaching and teaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. And then they came back and they discussed those things. It's part of training. He spent time talking with them about what they needed to do, about the things they needed to teach. They trained them. And then they encouraged them to get out and do the job that needed to be done. Now, I want to notice something else about him taking the lead. And brethren, you and I need to recognize this. I want to drop down to 1 Samuel chapter 14, verses 21 and 22. Now this is, of course, a little bit late in the story, and we'll come back to the other in a little bit. But notice it says, moreover, the Hebrews that were with the Philistines before that time, which went up with them into the camp from the country round about, even they also turned to be with the Israelites that were with Saul and Jonathan. Likewise, all the men of Israel which had hid themselves in Mount Ephraim, when they heard that the Philistines fled, even they also followed hard after them in the battle. Now notice, because of the great leadership of Jonathan, because of what he did and the encouragement that it gave, it spurred on these, some of them defectors, that had gone to the other side, is what it seems. It's possible that some there had been taken captive. We've got other individuals that had run off to the hills and they hid, and they found out what was going on. Never underestimate the influence that you have over those that are around you. Pick yourself up. Serve the Lord. Go forward and give it all that you've got. The Lord's work is a great work. And I realize that it's a challenging work. And I realize that it's difficult. And I realize that it comes with many uncertainties. But get on with it. Others will see your lead and they will follow. And it doesn't matter if it's cleaning the toilet, changing a light bulb, or getting out and studying the Bible with somebody. They need to see your lead. They need to see you working. It's contagious. Zeal can provoke very many. I want to note the next thing that I want to look at this afternoon, and that is that Jonathan planned. One of the things that I think so often the Lord's church forgets in many places is they forget to plan. They just think, well, okay, we're just going to do the Lord's work. And that shouldn't be that way. We are part of the greatest institution on the face of this earth. We have the greatest mission on the face of this earth, the saving of men's souls, teaching them the gospel so that they can be escaped from the fires of hell. Eternally. Never a second chance. The greatest job on the face of this earth. I believe that it deserves great planning. In 1 Samuel chapter 14, verses 8 through 10, we see that Jonathan planned. It said, "Then said Jonathan, behold, we will pass over unto these men, and we will discover ourselves unto them. If they say thus unto us, tarry until we come to you, then we shall stand still in our place and will not go up unto them." You see what he's planning? He's saying, okay, we're going to go up. We're going to crawl up the rocks. We're going to crawl up this very steep face of this hill. And we're going to let ourselves be known that we're here. And then in verse 10 it says, "But if we say thus, come up unto us, then we will go up, for the Lord hath delivered them into our hands, and this shall be a sign unto us." He laid down the plan. Now, I think it's important to note that there's nothing whatsoever within the text that insinuates that God said, "All right, Jonathan, you do this." There's nothing there. We just have simply an individual that recognizes that God has given them a job to do. Remember in Deuteronomy chapter 7 and verse 2, we see that they have the God-given responsibility of conquering. It says, "And when the Lord thy God shall deliver them before thee, thou shalt smite them and utterly destroy them. Thou shalt make no covenant with them, nor show mercy unto them." Jonathan knew that they were there to destroy. And within those guidelines, Jonathan got busy and did the work the best that he knew how. The Scriptures teach also that you and I need to plan. Matthew chapter 28 and verse 19, "Go ye therefore and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit." In Acts chapter 13, they, of course, in that particular instance, were inspired, told by the Holy Spirit to separate Paul and Barnabas, and go out and teach. But notice that they took that seriously. They went ahead and did that and sent them out to teach. In Colossians chapter 4 and verse 5, it says, "Walk in wisdom." Now, if you're going to walk in wisdom, if you're going to teach, if you're going to go out and do the work, you're going to have to make some plans. And I believe that very clearly insinuated within those Scriptures is the fact that we're going to have to make some plans. Jonathan showed us by his example that he planned. Do you think that if Jonathan would have just said, "Oh, we just might walk over there and see what happens." Well, but God surely could have helped them through that. But we don't see that happening. We see him planning. We see him determining and making definite plans that what they were going to do. Now notice that within those plans, Jonathan made some human judgments. He developed some criteria of his own. Not God-given criteria, but criteria that he said, "Okay, we're going to try to do this, and if this happens, we'll do this. If this happens, we'll do that." I don't see anything wrong with that for us today as we look to decide the work that we need to do. We'll read over those plans again, verses 9 and 10. "If they say thus unto us, tarry until we come to you, then we will stand still in our place and will not go up to them." And so what in other words is solid Jonathan saying, we're going to let them know that we're here, and if they're saying, "Hey, hang on a minute, we're going to come down to you." Jonathan's saying to his armor bearer, "We're not going up. We're going to stay." But then he says in verse 10, he says, "But if they say thus, come up unto us, then we will go up, for the Lord hath delivered them into our hand, and this shall be a sign unto us." There were human criteria within this plan. But we keep in mind, I think that as we make plans, we're going to make some human judgments. And I believe that that is right and proper. But we need to also remember that our job is to keep in mind what is God's will. In 2 Peter chapter 1 and verse 3, it says, "According as His divine power hath given unto us all things that pertain to life and godliness through the knowledge of Him who hath called us to glory and virtue." We recognize that God has a plan. He has a will and a desire, and when we make plans, we better make sure that our plans fall within the categories or within the will of God. And that comes from a clear study of God's Word to see what God has said that we need to do. Now, you and I, we need to recognize that God has left certain things up to our judgment. And we just need to make the best plans that we can, recognizing that we've got to make some judgments. And it could be either way. Obviously, we'd want it to be either way, would be a proper way within God's sight. But Jonathan said, okay, we're going to do this if this happens, we're going to do this if this happens. And I believe that, as we look at that, I believe that's a good thing to do. And we look at 1 John chapter 5 and verse 14, it says, and this is the confidence that we have in Him, that if we ask anything according to His will, He heareth us. Don't ever leave God out of your plans. I think that's one of the big problems that we can easily do, easily make, is that we make plans, but we don't stop to say, wait a minute, let's talk to God first and ask for His wisdom and ask for His direction. Let's go to the Word to make sure that we're doing what we ought to be doing. Now, I don't understand the providence of God, but brethren, it is a reality. And if we ask within God's will, He says that we're going to have that. He's going to hear us. He's going to listen. We need to have God's will in mind. Don't be looking for anybody to tap you on your shoulder and say, this is what you need to do, because that's not going to happen. I know that's the popular thing nowadays, but just because that is what many people think, we need to be careful to not just give up on the providence of God and the help of God because some have misused it. God is still alive and acting. Jonathan proceeded based on those plans. And I believe as we look at the apostles and the things that happened in the first century, I believe that's kind of partly what happened there. I know that there are times where it says that God told them, okay, this isn't going to work, we're going this direction. But like in Colossians chapter 4 and verse 3, the Apostle Paul says, with all praying also for us, that God would open unto us a door of utterance to speak the mystery of Christ, for which I am also in bond. He wasn't looking for something miraculous. He was just saying, brethren, you pray for us that God will open these doors. I believe that we need to pray for open doors. We need to ask some questions here as we look at the aspect of planning. Are we making plans to reach the lost? Brethren, I think that's one of the greatest responsibilities that we have. To begin with, we've got to make sure that we get to heaven. But inseparable from that is the fact that we've got to do our best to help others get there too. I want to go and look at a passage in Matthew chapter 9, and I love this passage, and I think we need to keep this passage and this command on our minds. Jesus said in verse 37, the harvest truly is plenteous, but the laborers are few. There's a plentiful harvest out there. I'm looking at going to Iowa to preach the gospel because the church is so weak. I believe that there's laborers there. If I didn't, I probably wouldn't be so ready to go. But then I want to note the second part of what Jesus said. Pray ye therefore the Lord of the harvest that He will send laborers into the harvest. We need to begin our planning with prayer. We need to spend time in prayer to God, asking Him that He will send laborers into the harvest. Now, I want us to note something about this passage. I believe that it's very clear that when we look at this passage, that laborers insinuates work. Now, I believe as we look at that passage, you say, look, we need to teach others so that they'll become workers within the kingdom. But understand that insinuated in that is laborers means work. You and I, we're going to pray, but does that mean that we can just sit back and God could do it all? It's not going to happen. We're going to have to get out there and we're going to have to get busy to do the Lord's work. We're going to have to get out there and reach and meet and teach those people that are lost. Don't expect it to happen. So often, brethren, in my limited experience, the reason the church doesn't grow is because the brethren don't teach. We need to teach the lost. We need to make it a priority. We can't just pray, send laborers into the harvest. We need to get busy and work. We need to do it to the best of our abilities. We need to begin with prayer. We need to ask ourselves the questions, are we making plans to build up the local church? You know, within building up the local church, we see fellowship in Acts chapter 2. You read verses 42 and 46. I believe that's an important thing, but keep in mind, we just talked about reaching the lost. And if we as a congregation of Lord's people turn inward, we're not going to grow. We may get good feelings about ourselves and about serving the Lord, but we're not going to grow numerically. And I don't believe we're going to grow spiritually because we're not out doing the work. It's so very important. Now, we need to recognize that fellowship is important, and I believe as the church, we need to keep that in mind. I've been working in an area of the country that we have to drive an hour and a half to go to a youth rally. I can't tell you how much money I've spent over the years, the past 13, driving to youth rallies and gospel meetings so that I could have a little bit more fellowship with brethren. A lot of you are in some of those similar places and you know what it's all about. But even locally, we need that fellowship. We need to recognize that we need to make plans about teaching, teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded you, and lo, I'm with you always, even unto the end of the world. In Matthew 28 and verse 20. We need to plan the teaching that we're going to have in a local congregation. Don't ignore that aspect. We need to make sure that we're making plans and bringing back erring brethren. James chapter 5, verses 19 and 20. If you, any of you do err from the truth and one convert him, let him know that he which converteth the sinner from the error of his way shall save a soul from death and shall hide a multitude of sins. We need to be planning about those that have gone astray. We need to be planning about those that are in the process of going astray. We need to look around into the eyes of our brothers and sisters and see when they're hurting and find out what's going on and do our best to help them. We need to plan. We need to understand that we make up an army in Ephesians chapter 6, verses 10 and following. And as an army, that means we've got a mission. And with a mission in mind, that insinuates the fact that we better be making some plans. And I believe within the Lord's church, we've got to have the greatest plans on the face of this earth, the greatest job to do, and we better be giving it a lot of work in making plans. I started in late February making plans with the brother in Marshalltown about this work that we're going to start next year. We have spent months and months just putting the booklet together and the information together to be able to send out to brethren and say, hey, look, we believe this is a good work. Because we believe souls are important. We just didn't want to throw something together. And brethren, as the Lord's church, our work is that important. We need to plan. To fail to plan is to plan to fail. Now, I want to get into the last part of my lesson because I know that Brother Ed's going to come up here and stop me here in a few minutes. Brethren, Jonathan trusted God. He trusted Him. Go back with me to chapter 14, verse 11. It says, and both of them discovered themselves under the garrison of the Philistines. And the Philistines said, behold, the Hebrews come forth out of the holes where they had hid themselves. Keep in mind, they've been running scared for who knows how long. And the men of the garrison answered Jonathan, his armor bearer, and said, come up to us, and we will show you a thing. And Jonathan said to his armor bearer, come up after me, for the Lord hath delivered them into the hand of Israel. And Jonathan climbed up upon his hands and upon his feet, and his armor bearer after him, and they fell before Jonathan, his armor bearer slew after him. Jonathan trusted in God to take care of him and help him through the struggles that he was about to undergo. He didn't shirk the responsibility that he had. He wasn't one that just sit back and say, well, you know what? I'm not sure that I want to put myself at risk. Jonathan was willing to get out there and do what needed to be done. I want to go to James chapter 1, verses 5 through 8. Because, brethren, God expects the same thing of you and I. James says, brethren, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, which giveth to all men liberally, and upbraideth not. And it shall be given him, but let him ask in faith, nothing wavering, for he that wavereth is like a wave of the sea driven with the wind and tossed. God expects us to have a great faith. God expects us to go forward and do the things that we need to do, not shirking the responsibilities as Stephen, as he stood before that mom. Not shirking his responsibilities as James, the apostle, was about to die. Not shirking the responsibilities that we have, but trusting God to take care of us in what's ahead. I want to tell you something. I've given everything I could to the Lord over the years, probably not near enough. And you know what? He's never let me down, even when I've let Him down. And I know that I may shirk responsibilities from time to time, and I pray that I don't. But when there's a job to do, brethren, we need to do it. Don't fear those things that are come. Fear not them which kill the body, but are not able to kill the soul, but rather fear Him which is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. That's the one that we are to fear. Jonathan put himself at risk. This was his life that was at stake. Now, I want us to note something, because you might look at Jonathan and say, well, he knew that God was going to take care of him, because the text is very clear that he had no idea that God was going to take care of him. Just like you and I, when we go out on a task, we don't know the outcome. We don't know that we may not be killed. We don't know that we may not be maimed. We don't know that we may not be shot down in one way or another. Neither did Jonathan. Read verse 6 with me. And Jonathan said to the young man that bare his armor, come, and let us go over into the garrison of these circumcised. Listen to this. It may be that the Lord will work for us. That "it may be" is in the imperfect, and that shows the possibility. That means that Jonathan recognized the possibility that God would help him. But Jonathan also recognized that the possibility was there that they would die. There's nothing miraculous about this account that I can find, brethren. This is Jonathan trusting in the providence of God, recognizing that he had a job to do that was within the realm of what God expected of the people. Putting into that plans and criteria that he would use in the development or the carrying out of that plan. And he went forward based on that plan, not knowing the outcome. Putting his own life at risk. At the risk of being tortured and killed. And I tell you what, being the king's son, it would not have been good. One thing you might keep in mind, he didn't let his position of authority say, all right, armor bearer, you go first. It's kind of like what Jesus did, isn't it? He went forward and showed the way. You and I need to show the way. We need to show. They didn't know. We don't know, but we need to trust God. Now, I want to talk to you about a couple of things that have to do with faith. You and I need to trust God and go forward in wisdom. Now, there's many areas that we can look at within the realm of trusting God. Every single area in life. Whatever struggle it is, whatever difficulty it is. But you stop and think about it. What about in giving as we've been prospered in 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verses 1 and 2? Brethren, we live in a wealthy, wealthy nation. Why is it that the more many people make, the less they give? They're not giving as they prospered. Don't understand. In this country, we have the poorest of us more than the most of the world. We've got the ability. We need to make sure that as we stop to consider about giving as we have prospered, that we think of the example in 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and verse 5 where the Apostle Paul said, and this they did not as we hoped, but first gave their own selves to the Lord and unto us by the will of God. put God first in your giving. Give to God first after you give yourself to God. And then it won't be quite so hard. I still remember the example of my father, and I'll never forget it. Back many years ago when $100 was a lot of money, he put $100 in the collection plate. And then he would go out Monday morning because he didn't have the money to cover it. And he'd get busy and find some money to cover that check. That's the example that I grew up with. My dad gave himself to the Lord. He shunned his family. And they shunned him. But he gave himself to the Lord. He was able to do those things that need to be done. What about in the work of the church? The money to teach the lost, the saved, the budget. What about going forward and trusting God to give and supply? We need to be challenged. You know, we make challenges. We make pledges to pay for those cell phones that we carry on our belt to look important. What a brother told me. It's got to be true. We make challenges or we make sacrifices in our life to pay for that. I don't know what that is that come across the TV, but they pay a lot for those services to get all them channels that you don't have time to watch anyway. Oh yeah, sign right on the dotted line. We want to buy a house. What do? We'll sign right on the dotted line. We'll make the sacrifices. We'll make it somehow. But what about when it comes to giving to the Lord? What about when it comes to giving to the Lord's work? What about when it comes to making sure the Lord's work is carried out? What about the widow and her two mites? In Mark chapter 12 and verse 44, who gave all that she had. I don't think any of us have done that. I know I haven't. You and I can rob ourselves of so much. Malachi chapter 3 and verse 10. You'll have to look that up. I don't have time. Oh, where's the sacrifice? Where's the faith in God? What about the entertainment? What about the job? Do those things interfere? What about family? What about friends? They shouldn't interfere. Have faith in God and put Him first. Trust God. And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to His purpose. Trust Him to take care of it.